कुञ्जविहारी गौराधमाधव कुञ्जविहारी जय गोपीगणवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीगणवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशुरानन्दना ब्रजजनरन्दना यशुरानन्दना ब्रजजनरन्दना यमुना तीरवनचारि यमुना तीरवनचारी गौराधमाधव कुञ्जविहारी गौराधमाधव कुञ्जविहारी जय गोपीजनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीजनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोरानन्दना ब्रजजनरन्दना यशोरानन्दना ब्रजजनरन्दना यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी गौराधमाधव कुञ्जविहारी गौराधमाधव जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस ब्रज आचार्य अष्टोत्तरस्तु श्री श्रीमदेशी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय निष्कान फैल आचार्य श्री प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय निताय गौर भयमनंदे हरि हरि बो समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय आदवैष्टिय समदवती आदवैष्टिय समदवती आदवैष्टिय समदवती आदवैष्ट श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, text number 45. Word meanings, Yuyam, both of you, husband and wife, Mam, unto me, Putra Bhavena, as your son, Brahma Bhavena, knowing that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Cha, and Asakrit, constantly, Chintayantau, thinking like that, Krita Snehao, dealing with love and affection, Yasyete, shall both obtain, Matgatim, my supreme abode, Param, which is transcendental beyond this material world. Yuyamam Putra Bhavena. Brahma Bhavena cha sakrit, Chintayanta krita sneha, Yasyete madgatim param, Yuyamam putra bhavena, Brahma Bhavena cha sakrit, Chintayanta krita sneha, Yasyete madgatim param, Yuvamam putra bhavena, Brahma bhavena cha sakrit, Chintayanta krita sneha, Yasyete madgatim param, ladies. Translation. Both of you, husband and wife, constantly think of me as your son, but always know that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By thus thinking of me constantly with love and affection, you will achieve the highest perfection, returning home back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada's purport. This instruction by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to his father and mother, who are eternally connected with him, is especially intended for persons eager to return home back to Godhead. Once you never think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as an ordinary human being, as non-devotees do. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally appeared and left his instructions for the benefit of all human society. But fools and rascals unfortunately think of him as an ordinary human being and twist the instructions of Bhagavad Gita for the satisfaction of their senses. Practically everyone commenting on Bhagavad Gita interprets it for sense gratification. It has become especially fashionable for modern scholars and politicians to interpret Bhagavad Gita as if it were something fictitious, and by their wrong interpretations they are spoiling their own careers and the careers of others. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, is fighting against this principle of regarding Krishna as a fictitious person and of accepting that there was no battle of Kurukshetra, that everything is symbolic, and that nothing in Bhagavad Gita is true. In any case, if one truly wants to be successful, one can do so by reading the text of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially stressed the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, Yari Deka Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh. If one wants to achieve the highest success in life, one must accept Bhagavad Gita as spoken by the Supreme Lord. By accepting Bhagavad Gita in this way, all of human society can become perfect and happy. It is to be noted that because Vasudeva and Devaki would be separated from Krishna when he was carried to Gokul, the residence of Nanda Maharaj, the Lord personally instructed them that they should always think of him as their son and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That would keep them in touch with him. After 11 years, the Lord would return to Mathura to be their son, and therefore there was no question of separation. Om Gyanatim Randasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Milita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Yuyan Dham Mam Putra Bhavena Brahma Bhavena Chasakrit Chindayantao Krita Snehao Yasyete Madgatim Param. Both of you, husband and wife, constantly thinking of me as your son, but always constantly think of me as your son, but always know that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By thus thinking of me constantly with love and affection, you will achieve the highest perfection, returning home back to Godhead. Here again we're coming across this dual aspect of Vasudeva and Devaki. They're maintaining both of these bhavas, putra bhavena and brahma bhavena. So putra bhavena means thinking of them as thinking of Krishna as their son, and brahma here means supreme brahman, parabrahman, thinking of him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chintayanto, the third line has these words, chintayanto and krita sneha. So chinta means thinking or consciousness, and sneha means affection. We can see how one of these has to do with the mind and the intelligence, how one thinks, and the other has to do with the heart. So Vasudeva and Devaki, they can understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead intellectually, but in their heart, their feeling, their sneha is sneha, love. There's one place where Prabhupada explains, of course there are different words for love, we also have different words for love in English, but he explains that sneha means the affection that goes down, especially to the child or subordinate. That's sneha. That's as water flows down. Sneha flows down. So Krishna is their subordinate in this sense, the child. So his sneha is, their sneha is going to him. So Prabhupada opens this purport by saying that this instruction is especially for those going back home, back to Godhead. I want you to accept Krishna's instructions. He quotes this line later in the purport. Yadi deka tari kaha Krishna upadesh. So this is the verse. Amara gya guru haya tari idesh. Become a guru and deliver everyone in this land. So how do you deliver them? By Krishna upadesh. Upadesh means instruction. We have our upadeshamrita. So Krishna upadesh means the instructions spoken by Lord Krishna. In other places, Prabhupada says. So this means not only, of course here, this is a verse today spoken by Lord Krishna. And Bhagavad Gita is all spoken by Lord Krishna, all the instructions. But Srimad Bhagavatam is also instructions by Lord Krishna, directly or indirectly. So all of our Vaishnava literature is Krishna Upadesh. So especially here, Prabhupada pinpoints Bhagavad Gita, and he raises a point that he often makes, how people misinterpret Bhagavad Gita for their own sense gratification, for their own purposes. This point comes up often in the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, Prabhupada in some places he compares them to the demons who try to kill Krishna. When Kamsa was there, he sent so many demons to kill Krishna physically, but the philosophers, they tried to kill Krishna by saying he didn't actually exist. He's just fiction. He's just some legend. He never actually existed. So this is another way of killing him, saying that he's not a real person. So Prabhupada, of course, had very strong feelings about this. He was convinced that Krishna is an actual person. He was here 5,000 years ago. He spoke Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes people say, well, how can we know anything about God and so on? So we say, well, he comes himself and tells us. And someone was there recording it all. It's right there, written down. The reporter of Vyasadeva was there, writing it down. So there it is. You just have to accept that this was actually Krishna speaking, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So our Shraddha, our faith is, this is actually Krishna speaking. This idea of faith. Because people might say, well, you believe that, but I don't believe that. So, what can I do about it? I just don't believe it. This question of faith has intrigued me somewhat because I've been asking myself for a long time, and I decided to go on the internet and do a little research in the philosophy of religion, about what people think of the idea of faith, and can you willfully believe something? In other words, if I don't believe in Bhagavad Gita, can I say, no, I'm just going to believe it? Okay, strain and force myself by will. So there's a technical term in philosophy of religion called doxastic voluntarism. So that word doxastic means related to faith or belief. Doxastic voluntarism, and voluntarism means by your own will. So there's a theory that by your will, you can make yourself believe something. Now, of course, as things are in philosophy, there are many, of course, debates back and forth, and there are divisions and subdivisions. So you have direct and indirect doxastic voluntarism. So direct is what I was just referring to, where just by the force of your will, say, I'm going to make myself believe it. So the argument against that is that you can't really do that, because there are certain things you're just not going to believe. The person I was reading, scholar, he said, just like you can't force yourself to believe that elephants rule the world. No matter how much you try, you're just not going to make yourself believe that. So you may be able to do it in certain limited ways, but especially big philosophical questions, you're probably not going to be able to do it. But there's something called indirect doxastic voluntarism, which means that you can do things to make yourself believe. And I thought, that's what we say. Of course, we have another aspect to it. When I read philosophy and theology, I see, because all of this is pretty much, of course, it's Western philosophy, so we also get Western theology.
So it tends to be based on the Christian point of view. So sometimes their explanations and their debates fall short because there are certain premises that they have that we don't have. For example, one premise we had is that we lived before. We didn't start in this life. We have a past. Reincarnation changes the way you look at things. Just like the problem of evil, which is another cursed perennial debate in philosophy. Why an all-powerful, all-merciful God allows suffering in this world. So we have a particular point of view on that because we understand that we lived previously. So we didn't start from zero in this life. So the same thing with faith. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says we have faith according to the modes of material nature. Those with faith in the mode of goodness worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those in passion worship the demigods, and those in ignorance worship spirits and ghosts and so on. Or maybe some powerful person. Those in the mode of passion also worship some powerful person. So we see everybody has some, if not worship, some respect or adoration towards some other persons. So according to the modes of material nature, we have faith in different ways. So we know that our faith is shaped by that, by our past. That's one aspect of it. But if we don't have the faith that we want, part of what's behind this idea of voluntarily making yourself believe something is that you have some reason to do that. Somehow you're convinced in some way that I actually should believe this. It's good for me to believe this. Some of this comes in the context of the discussion of Pascal's wager. You're probably familiar with that. Pascal's wager. He was a Western philosopher. He was a Christian. So his argument was basically that you should believe in the Christian God because even if you're wrong, you're not going to lose much. But if you're right, then you get eternal salvation. So it's more elaborate than that, but that's the basic idea. You don't have much to lose if you're wrong, but you have a lot to lose if God doesn't exist and you've been worshiping him, well, that's all right. It's not going to be such a big deal. But if he exists and you don't worship him, you don't have faith in him, then you're going to burn forever in hell. So that's really bad. So you better believe. So if that inspires you to believe, this doxastic voluntarism discussion comes up in the context of this because people will say, well, I can't just believe just because, you know, I want to take the wager, I just don't believe it. So then they discuss, well, can you make yourself believe it? So you may want to believe, you may be convinced of this. Yeah, that sounds like a good bet. I should believe in God. But I don't, so what am I supposed to do? So we might also be somewhat in that position. Gee, I wish I had stronger faith. There's the saying, faith can move mountains. People have faith and do amazing things in all kinds of material ways. Of course, that's one of the things that these people who are teaching you to succeed in whatever way, to be successful in life, you have to have faith, you have to do your affirmations, and get up in the morning and look at your little sayings on your proverbs on your mirror, get ready for your day, convince yourself, yes, I can. Yes, I can sell 5 cars today. Yes, I can. I can do it. I believe in myself. So let's get yourself fired up so you can do it. So we don't quite do that necessarily. Of course we can, I guess, if we want to. Why not? You can use anything in Krishna's service, so we can use affirmations also. But we have other ways of increasing our faith. First of all, you can ask, well, why do we believe at all? Ado Shraddha Tatu Sadhu Sangha. Rupa Goswami says you have to have a little bit of faith to start with. So how do we increase that faith? Of course, how does that faith start? That can also come from the past. It also can come, we hear something. We say, well, the evidence. On the basis of some evidence, we get some initial faith. So how do we increase that? Sadhu Sangha. Especially Sadhu Sangha. Or Sadhu Shastra Guru. These three things. These are our evidence. This is where we get our evidence. And that evidence gives faith. The more evidence you have to convince you of something, the more faith you have, the more you believe in it. So our evidence comes from these three sources. Sadhu Shastra and Guru. So we take Sadhu Sangha, the association of devotees. Prabhupada created this institution for various reasons, but this is certainly one of them. You associate with other people who have faith. Advanced devotees, of course, their faith is the strongest. Sudrida Nishjaya. They have firm faith. Prabhupada, of course, had absolute faith, absolute conviction. One of the striking things about Srila Prabhupada's books is his absolute conviction. He never says, well, maybe, perhaps, I'm guessing here, but it's like there's a people who, today we have this way of talking where we also say, well, I don't know, but, you know, as soon as somebody says that, you say, why should I listen to the rest of the sentence? I don't know, but, well, what? You don't know, then keep your mouth shut. So Prabhupada never said, I don't know, but, you don't see that in his books anywhere. He said, I know. In fact, there were some morning walks where people would say, and Prabhupada would say, you don't know, but I know. You're blind, but that doesn't mean I'm blind. I can also teach you to see. So Prabhupada's absolute faith, that's one way we can voluntarily, of our own initiative, make ourselves believe something by listening to his words, by putting ourselves in samadhi. The other day, Madan Mohan was telling me he was thinking of the word trance and how it comes up in our books, what are different kinds of trance. So certainly reading, this is something I realized when I first came to Krishna consciousness. I couldn't move into the temple right away because I was in the military, but I used to spend the whole day reading. So one thing I realized was, when you read, it's really absorption, it's really a samadhi, you concentrate. It's hard to concentrate on the holy name, japa, the same words over and over again. But when you're reading, it tends to grab your mind a little easier. So that's also a kind of samadhi. And so especially when you're reading and you're hearing, you're absorbing from someone with absolute conviction, that's a powerful effect that transforms. And of course, not only intellectually, it works on different levels. Intellectually, because you're hearing all the arguments. But at the same time, you're hearing transcendental sounds. That in itself purifies the heart. Chaito darpana marjanam. That's Sankirtan. Param vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. The Bhagavatam is Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So it purifies the heart, just the act of hearing transcendental sound vibration. So we associate with sadhu, and we listen to sadhu and guru. Srila Prabhupada, of course, is our primary guru. He's our direct first connection to Krishna, or Prabhupada's disciples. And everyone in the parampara, this point that Prabhupada is making about accepting Bhagavad Gita as it is. We know, of course, as Prabhupada writes in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, someone asked him, what need is there for another Bhagavad Gita? There are so many others. So Prabhupada said, as far as I know, none of them are presenting Krishna as he is, as he presents himself. We have to understand Bhagavad Gita in the proper way. And how do we do that? How do we become a student of Bhagavad Gita, just as the first student of Bhagavad Gita did it, Arjuna? In one place, Arjuna says, I totally accept this truth, everything that you're telling me. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitam, Param Ambaran. You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the way Krishna accepts it. So Prabhupada said there weren't any books that were presenting it that way. The commentaries are messing things up. It's interesting if you ever look at some other translation of Bhagavad Gita, because of the way we're trained, when we read it, we probably read it with bhakti. We say, this sounds pretty good, actually. But you'll see they'll take those words, then you read the commentary and you say, what's wrong with this person? That's not what Krishna's saying here. They give some personal twist or some political twist to it without not taking directly what Krishna is saying. He is saying, I am the source of everything. Worship me, become my devotee. Mom, he uses this word, first person singular, me, I. So we accept that directly. So Prabhupada felt there was a need for that. When I read this here, I was reading the purport, it was really making, Prabhupada sounded like he was really in the minority. How did he say it here? He said something like, the Krishna consciousness movement is fighting against this principle of regarding Krishna as a fictitious person and of accepting that there is no battle of Kurukshetra, that everything is symbolic, that nothing in Bhagavad Gita is true. So we're fighting against this principle because there are so many on the other side. We're outnumbered in this. But Prabhupada is championing the cause. This is our message. No, Bhagavad Gita is actually true. It's Krishna. So we have Sadhu Shastra Guru, we have their words to inspire us. And we also have our own realization. We have, that's one thing, when we read it, those who study Bhagavad Gita, they get the sense, and there's a transcendental sense that you understand the reality of things. There are certain philosophers also, I think Kant, this was part of his idea, was that there's certain truth that can only be arrived at transcendentally. Now, his definition may have been somewhat different than ours, but it was the basic idea that just by speculation and our sensory apparatus, we can't get to the truth of everything. You have to get it some other way. So there's a way that we get truth that's just our own heart. Really, the jiva and the soul is responding to the transcendental sound vibration of the Bhagavad Gita, and the truth of it becomes real. And there's also the argument that Bhagavad Gita has been around for a long time. It has power, it has staying power. That also gives us some faith. This is not just somebody's speculation. These are not just ordinary words. There's a power in the Bhagavad Gita that has transformed people's lives for thousands of years. So these are all ways we can... These are our perspective on the Bhagavad Gita and the basis of our faith, especially Sadhu Shastra Guru and our own practice, even in this website I was reading about in the Philosophy of Science. They also put this forward as one of the ways of indirect doxastic voluntarism, that you act with faith. If you act with faith, then you begin to believe. Which is what Prabhupada says at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita also. He doesn't exactly say faith, but in his introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, he says, one should read Bhagavad Gita theoretically accepting that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Don't just dismiss it right away. Just take it that, you know, this person isn't lying here. He's not lying to us. He's presenting himself this way. Let us hear what he has to say. Just work on that premise and hear what he has to say and see if it makes sense. So we read Bhagavad Gita with an open mind. If one can read Bhagavad Gita with an open mind, one will see how much power it has. This, of course, it should be the approach to knowledge. Science is supposed to approach knowledge in that way. This is how they try to position themselves. We're open-minded, we don't have any prejudices, but we find that in practice this isn't true. They have so many prejudices. There's all kinds of corruption that goes on in science, and of course they have the one prejudice, at least many of them have, that the truth can be arrived at through scientific experiment. There's no other way to do it. Not by meditation or yoga or bhakti yoga or some other way. Only by science. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. That's their dogma. But science, really, if you want to get the truth, you have to be open-minded. So adar shraddha means you begin with some initial faith, and then you open your mind to the evidence that's there. Try to see if it can increase your faith. See if it makes more sense. Prabhupada often presented this. He said, just read the books. See, test for yourself. Many of his room conversations with scholars and others. Say, just read the books and see. Judge for yourself whether what Krishna is saying makes sense. So Prabhupada, of course, he accepted 100% what Krishna was saying, and that is also how he trained us to accept Krishna's words as they are, and see how they transform our lives. So Well, the translation again, both of you, husband and wife, constantly think of me as your son, but always know that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By thus thinking of me constantly with love and affection, you will achieve the highest perfection, returning home back to Godhead. Questions or comments? Chesha Prabhu?
Thank you for the class, Nagarshwar. Just because you might be interested, you mentioned your military past and you're talking about Bhagavad Gita as it is. Someone, I think on the GBC discussions conference on email, they sent a link recently where there was a report, there was the first Hindu chaplain in the United States Army.
Yeah, I saw that.
They did an interview with her, this woman. She's a woman.
Yeah.
And they show her reading from the Bhagavad Gita. And when you see the book, you can see this is Prabhupada's Gita that she's reading from.
Wow. Yeah,
so, interesting.
Slowly making progress. Madam Mohan Prabhu?
You were mentioning that the three types was it of the evidence or things that built your faith. Was it the guru, the shastra?
Sadhu, yeah.
And the sadhu. But I was also wondering, like, Glaujamins, Halava, Sandesh. There's another three of other things that seem to increase your coming back over and over again.
Yeah, I don't know if that's faith exactly, but of course anything we do spiritually increases our faith because it's purifying our heart.
Prasadam really works good.
Faith in prasadam, yeah. If you want to go to Goloka to have nice Golubjamins, that's okay. Anything else, ladies? Yes.
You can't force yourself to have faith. I was wondering, can you force yourself to forgive someone that you don't want to forgive?
I didn't see that. I don't know. I don't have any reference exactly for that. I suppose in the same way, this principle can be applied. There's direct and indirect. So you can do things to try to bring the mood of forgiveness within your heart, seeing the good qualities in the person, seeing the bad qualities in yourself, seeing that it's understanding philosophically that whatever happens to me is actually my karma. That's certainly there. So actually seeing things from the philosophical point of view can help us to change our heart, actually. Because forgiveness is a change of heart. So with philosophical understanding, we can change the way our heart responds to things. So I would say that yes, it may not be immediate, but it's something that we can work on in different ways to cause it to happen.
So it's a mental, you decide to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It may not be immediate. You decide to do it and you may have to take steps to make it actually happen in your heart. You swatting flies on a tear? You both.
It's kind of the question is, I guess, about intelligence and heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's this forgiveness you're discussing is, you know, in intellectual, you try to do it, and then with the heart, it comes. I was thinking about, in the verse, it talked about two things, you know, they have the two, Brahma Bhav and Putra Bhav.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned, one is intelligence. I guess the Brahma Bhav is through the intelligence. They're worshipping him as, seeing him as God, and then Putra Bhav is from the heart. So I thought it's interesting that you have, it seems like there are two things, the intelligence and the heart, and those both things coincide, are there together, worshipping Krishna in two different ways, and they're almost like contradictory, because one you're seeing him as God from the intelligence, and one you're approaching him as son through the heart. So I don't know if you have anything
Well, there's different ways of worshiping Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that one who studies this worships me with his intelligence. So that act of using our intelligence in the service of Krishna is also, we can be seen as worshiping Krishna with our intelligence. But, of course, even in the 10th chapter, Krishna, where he says, with the Buddha Bhava Samanvita. So right there he's had those two put together, Buddha Bhava. And from Buddha, we know also in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, basically the idea there's kind of a progression where you go from Buddha Yoga to Bhakti Yoga, where with your intelligence you become convinced of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, convinced that Krishna is God, or you learn about God through your intelligence, and then the bhava, the love, develops from that. So they both actually work together in bringing out the feeling. Ultimately, it's the feeling, of course. Now, one thing when I was talking about this, I thought, well, I don't want to say that their sneha, their love, is only for the child, Krishna, because it's not as if they don't love Lord Vishnu. There's also, of course, bhava for Lord Vishnu, or Lord Krishna as the supreme absolute truth in that sense. So that's there also. But our intelligence, everything, of course, that we have can be used in the service of Krishna. But there's a sense where we relate intelligence to philosophical inquiry and understanding, and that's not so much there in Goloka Vrindavan, for example. It's a little bit more there in Dwarka Leela, Mathura Leela. But in Vrindavan, even though it's philosophical thinking, it's not directed at Krishna necessarily. It's not discovering who Krishna is and forgetting one's wrestle with Krishna. But at least in the beginning stages, our buddhi, and then Prabhupada actually equates it, buddhi yoga, with bhakti yoga. When our intelligence is used to understand Krishna, that's an aspect of bhakti yoga. And also that just to have the correct understanding. Krishna says, one who understands me as I am, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tapvata. So veti means understanding or knowing. One who has the proper knowledge, he goes back to Godhead. So that's also an aspect of it, just knowing intellectually. Of course, we say that if you know intellectually, then the heart is going to follow. If you know that Krishna is God, then you naturally become infatuated, enamored, in love with God. That follows. So, yes.
So from the beginning of your class, we could understand that a minimum of faith is necessary to catch the science later. And the science is there to, if I understand properly, to realize, to understand, to accept this faith, then to return to a full faith. It's a step, the science could be a step to really understand that we should really believe in God. But the faith has to be, in the beginning, has to be at least a little bit. Then we have to cultivate by knowledge to really have, again, full faith.
Yes. Well, Rupa Goswami says, Adho Shraddha Tatu Sadhu Sangha. So the next step is to associate. You have some initial faith, you associate with devotees, then you go through the different stages in Arta and Vritti, but then you get Nishta. Nishta means firm faith. When the anartas are washed away, then you get Nishta. Huh. What is it? Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. How does that verse begin? So there, it also has Naishtiki. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. So this is the same idea, Nishta, Naishtiki. So by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam, we get Nishta. What is that? Bhagavatam, of course, is a kind of sadhu sangha also, hearing the Bhagavatam. So our whole process of Krishna consciousness is in the context of sadhu sangha. So in that sadhu sangha, then Krishna consciousness develops, our faith increases over time. That's the prescription given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Associate with the other devotees, follow the program, and then that initial faith. Now the question I thought you were going to ask about, you know, where that comes from. Generally, the Vaishnava Acharya has explained that this comes from Agyata Sukriti. The initial faith comes from Agyata Sukriti, which Krishna sends out of his causeless mercy. And when that becomes mature enough, we have a little bit of faith, and we start associating with devotees, and things develop from there. Okay, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.